LCC doesn't have the jurisdiction to issue you a license to serve alcohol in the public right-of-way. And we work closely with OLCC. They frequently ask us to review anything that has to do with the street. They want us to review the permit application that they're working on.
So does a set of circumstances potentially exist where OLCC might approve the serving of alcohol that you guys decide, in your opinions, should not have alcohol, and you can allow the event, but not the alcohol?
If I understand what you're saying somebody has a permit to close the street,
mm-hmm.
but in our estimation, it's not a good idea to have alcohol,
right.
but OLCC has approved alcohol. That.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a situation where we would have a stricter kind of regulation.
That's not what I'm asking.
Well, I can't think of a situation.
I'm not asking you to describe a situation. I'm saying, given that a situation may exist in an event where we would close the street, and because of prior problems with that event, we've decided it's okay to have the event. We don't want alcohol served there. Can we, with this approval that you're asking from us, do we have the ability to nuance approving the event, but saying we really don't want alcohol served at that event, even if OLCC allows the alcohol?
Well, we could certainly.
And I don't want to name any particular event.
No, I know which event you're talking about.
I want to make sure that we aren't unwittingly giving up some nuanced authority that may help us control events that otherwise might get out of control with alcohol added.
The way this subsection reads right now, if we issued them a permit to close the street
mm-hmm.
and they had an OLCC permit, mm-hmm. then they could have alcohol. So if we would have to change that language slightly, but.
Let me just ask you another question. If we left the code the way it is, do you then have the ability to issue a permit, and we, the council, have the ability to say no to the alcohol?
Yes, you do.
If we left the code the way it is right now?
Yes.
But let me try to clarify. You're basically asking for administrative authority to manage this whole process at the bureau level, without having to take each and every one of these to the city council?
That's exactly right.
Is there any other changes in the status quo code? Just because I think Commissioner Leonard's, the council might want to use this as an opportunity.
That's not what I'm hearing from the questions I'm asking. What I'm understanding you to say is that currently you guys can issue a permit to close a street, but if alcohol is served, you have to have council consent to do that. Tell me if I've got this wrong, under this new language, you would be able to continue to issue the permit, but part of that approval would include allowing alcohol, carte blanche, if the OLCC gave their permission as well. What I'm concerned about is if we have an event where we've had a history of problems and decide the event itself is good and there are a lot of people that like to go to the event and participate in the event that don't require alcohol for them to enjoy themselves, but we decide as a council we don't want alcohol served there, I would like to retain that authority. And if we don't have that authority and we've delegated it to you, I'd like to be clear in the code that your new delegated authority includes the nuanced ability to say you can have the event, but you can't have the alcohol, notwithstanding OLCC may have agreed.
Commissioner Leonard, just for my benefit, what's the last conspicuous example where we split the baby that way, where the council?
I don't know that we have, but I can foresee the potential very soon, if not this summer, for us to want to split the baby that way.
Is there, to address your concerns, is there a way, and I'm learning about this as I listen to your questions and the answers, is there a way to delegate this administrative authority to the Bureau, but to build in a trigger so that if if there's a complaint or a certain history.
That's what I'm asking.
It would automatically come
to us. That's what I'm asking that we have, and the answer I'm hearing is the way it's not crafted that way. We may have to craft it a different way to do that, which I would support then delegating that authority. I'm reluctant.
And if there was a trigger, it would come back. It would then come to us, as usual, be on the consent agenda, but would be we would know about it.
I'm not even asking for that. I'm just asking that if we recognize that a certain event is accumulating more and more problems that appear to be alcohol-related, that the commissioner in charge can say, you know what, go ahead and approve the permit, but use your authority to not allow alcohol.
Right.
I want to make sure
that's
we
what
have
we have
that.
Now. Right. I'm aware of that.
That's what I like now.
I see.
I'm not comfortable removing the city's ability to then nuance.
But the city's ability to do that right now, and the only instance I can think of where it's an issue, we're not actually issuing a permit for that event. We don't issue a permit for that event. We don't have an event organizer that comes to us. So
what event
we're working on that.
Well, I...
Oh.
I think that's what you're getting at. I'm just. I mean, I've been involved in issuing community events and the ordinance process for over 16 years. We do not have, or nor have we ever had a split where OLCC sees it as a good idea to have alcohol in the street, and we don't.
And I recognize that, but we have to acknowledge that the potential exists in the future that that may be something that.
So are you comfortable with the commissioner in charge having the authority and being held responsible for splitting that when necessary?
Yep.
Well, which is, if I could, is that clear? And I understand we're going back to maybe changing some existing code, which is fine with me. Is that clear in what you've proposed to us?
Well,
or do we need to come back to council with some changes to what's before them to make that clear?
You know, I mean, the city attorneys have reviewed this, and
so we'll be coming back to council with some clarification of the language. Make sure that we've captured what you've said.
So is this time sensitive?
No.
Or can this matter be put over and
we're going
to
just we're this is the first reading. This is what we do at first readings. Did you have a comment?
I have several. I have a question first. Does if you're going to not sell alcohol, does OLCC have to give a permit?
Mm-hmm. If you're
not going to sell alcohol,
if you're not selling it, if you're giving it away,
yeah, that's what I was getting at. I thought that's what you were getting at. If you are drinking alcohol, if you have alcohol in the public right of way on the street or the sidewalk, OLCC wants it permitted as well. So, if right now when we issue a street closure permit, it's only for the closure of the permit unless we come before council and then we repeal that portion of code and we work with OLCC on that. I'm quite sure that the OLCC would require that, but if that's what we need to discuss at the second reading, I can verify that.
And thank you very much. You've been very helpful in giving me and my staff information up to this point, so I appreciate the discussion. One of the things I'm concerned about is our neighborhood night out parties, which are many of them do have street closure permits.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that many of them would not be aware of the issue with having to apply for an OLCC permit. So I wonder if one of those, they have not so far become rowdy and drunk and disorderly, and the police shows up. What's the penalty for not having applied for an OLCC permit if we've allowed street drinking?
Once a permit is issued and a applicant serves alcohol and we become aware of it, OLCC becomes aware of it, we have the discretion to enforce. In terms of the police bureau, we also have the discretion to say, you need to move that onto private property. And when it comes to the neighborhood neighborhood night out sort of work, we really work hard to make sure that people comply as opposed to just immediately issuing them a citation. And if it's only if they resist some common sense request for us to comply, do we take it to the next level of enforcement. Does that answer your question?
It answers the question, but not necessarily the concern that if street drinking is then allowed with a permit, with a street closure permit,
No, it's not allowed. I want to be really clear. It's not allowed.
Currently.
Currently.
No, I'm saying under this proposal, it would be.
This doesn't...
It would repeal that provision.
It would not be something that the city of Portland code would prohibit.
If the OLCC permit...
Right.
Is granted.
Is granted.
Because all we're doing here is repealing the provision of the code that prohibits street drinking, if you have a permit.
If you have a permit.
And what I'm suggesting is you just add a condition in there. And that be that or at least some modification so that the commissioner in charge may decide if that permit's issued not to allow alcohol.
And what's the process for applicants to get approval through OLCC?
I would have to find that out for you. But what I understand is that, to go back to your earlier question, because I remember being in a meeting with OLCC where the art galleries that want to serve their patrons a glass of wine on last Thursday, first Thursday, whatever it might be, that they're not allowed to give that wine away without a permit. So the same, I think, would hold true to your earlier question, but we'll check on it. The OLCC permit process, I think this is a pretty thorough, lengthy process. And if it's a good idea to have an OLCC representative here the next time to answer more detailed questions, or I can find that out.
Want to bring to the council's attention that OLCC's interpretation of its own rules in terms of giving away or sharing without cost alcohol has changed in the past 10 months. And they've actually cracked down on that. You can no longer, for example, have sampling. You can no longer give away alcohol, even if people stay on the premise. So they've actually gotten tougher on the whole giving away of alcohol as part of events.
I think it would be helpful between this and the second reading to have discussions with Stephanie Reynolds and Teresa Marchetti from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement from Crime Prevention and the Alcohol Control. I also want to make sure that we don't inadvertently complicate our application for the alcohol impact area, which is going to the OLCC in December 17th at 9:30, because we're currently in downtown trying to address the problem of street drinking because of the known problems of it. So I want to make sure that we're confident that OLCC will be our control over this if we're deciding that the council is no longer going to be involved. So I'll look forward to the ongoing discussion.
I just have one question, Mayor.
When
we authorize someone to have an event on a city right-of-way and the OLCC issues a liquor license, are we still liable for any conduct that occurs on public right-of-way as a result of the alcohol?
Part of the permit process is that they list the city as additionally insured.
So that's a concern I have. So I also, frankly, this conversation has prompted for me. I'm going to take a closer look at what we do in our parks, because I actually have restricted the sale of alcohol in our parks for public events for a lot of reasons, including the fact that things get out of hand, and there's some liability issues that attach to that, too. So for me, this discussion has been very helpful to frame some issues. Thank you, Mayor.
All right, so why don't we check in with council offices or staff over the next week. This will move to a second reading. If we need to push it out further, we will. I think it's good to air the issues out, even if some of them are unrelated to the administrative rule, but I think some are as well. Be an opportunity to polish this a little bit. So this moves to a second reading next week, but...
It might be helpful, Mayor, if I might suggest to have it as a second reading after the OLCC discussion on the alcohol impact area, so we can hear some of their direction.
When is that?
That's December 17th, so it would be after.
So when is that? When would be the next council?
It would be
the first of the year.
January 5th.
So we'll continue this to January 5th?
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So I wonder if we could move to 1576. I have Water Bureau staff standing by.
76. Oh, the polled item, sure. Can you please read non-emergency ordinance item number 1576?
Authorize a construction contract and provide payment for the Powell Butte Reservoir 2 Phase 2 project.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Schaff. Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau. With me are Mike Stewart, chief engineer of the Water Bureau, Teresa Elliott, project manager for our LT2 storage compliance program, and Christine Moody, the chief procurement officer for the city. As you know, we're building a second 50-million-gallon reservoir on Powell Butte. We're in phase two of the project. Phase one was the excavation. Phase two is the design and construction of the reservoir.
That's completed.
Phase one is completed. The design is completed, and we're now ready to move forward with the construction. And we're here seeking approval to put the construction of the reservoir out to bid. As you probably know, development at Powell Butte is governed by a 2003 master plan that approved development, including construction of a new underground reservoir, the water system components, and park improvements. We've conducted an extensive 13-year public process from 1995 to 2008 to review issues related to Powell Butte, the park, and the region's water supply system. The process included a formal stakeholder advisory committee composed of interests outside of city government, including neighborhood associations, schools, environmental organizations, recreational interests, and our outside wholesale water buyers. You may know that Powell Butte was purchased in 1925 solely as the site for the City of Portland water storage reservoirs. It is first and foremost a water facility with long-range plans for additional storage. In 1987, it was established as a natural resources-based park, and it was officially opened to the public in 1990. As part of the conditional use master plan, the project includes replacing the existing maintenance shed and restroom facilities, building an interpretive center and restroom. A new separate storage and maintenance facility at a different location will be built for the expanded needs of both the Water Bureau and parks. In addition, the existing gravel main parking lot will be paved, we'll be making trail improvements, and a new natural grass setting amphitheater will be built to better support the educational outreach programs in the park. The engineer's estimate for this project remains at $100 million, of which approximately $4 million is estimated to be the cost of the park improvements. Mike Storr is here to provide you with information regarding the procurement process we're using, as well as how we'll be maximizing MWESB participation in the project. Teresa should be able to answer any questions that Mike or I can't answer. And, of course, Christine Moody, as the Chief Procurement Officer, should be able to answer questions on the procurement process and how we're doing things differently to maximize that MWESB participation. Mike?
Good morning. As David mentioned, we're continuing on with this project that we've had underway for many years. David mentioned also that the government estimate is around $100 million. I'd rather not reveal details of the government estimate because we're going to be bidding shortly, but it's in that ballpark. One of the challenges in this contract is that something on the order of 90% of the cost of this contract is in huge concrete, rebar, and big pipe. That presents some challenges for letting the good faith process trip along its usual course. We chose to do this design bid build a couple of years ago, thinking that in the economic times at that time that we would get the best price for the government out of that. And while it is huge dollar value, it's not really terribly complicated. It's basically a big fat concrete box. So we decided to do it design bid build. Christine Moody approached us and said, is there anything that we could do to do a better job of ensuring that our good faith efforts pay off? So she convened a group of us that included Bureau staff, Christine and her staff, and Jim Van Dyke and Erica George from the Office of Counsel. And one of the things we wanted to talk to you today about is we're sort of creating a new outreach plan for this contract to be put in with the bid process that ensures that, or not necessarily ensures, but will give us a much better chance to make sure that we meet the good faith effort. And I'm going to let Christine talk about that a little bit.
Okay, Christine Moody, Procurement Services. So because of the size of the subcontracts at the first tier level on this project, our typical standard GFE process that we use asks for MWSB quotes, five MWSB quotes for at the first tier subcontractor level and doesn't go down to multiple levels underneath that. In past efforts, when we use alternative contracting processes, we found success by using a MWSB outreach plan, and that's where the city works with the contractor, not so much as a responsiveness issue, but after the awarded bidder has been proclaimed, we then work with them on a diversity plan that reaches down below the first tier subcontractor level into the second and third tier level. And we've seen success in that in some of our past projects. And so what we wanted to do on this project, because of the large dollar amounts of the first tier subcontractors, is use that same sort of plan to increase MWSB participation and utilization on this large project. So we're doing something a little bit outside the standard, but we have, it's a city process we've used on several projects in the past.
I'd mention a couple of things that are in what's the minimum requirements. We're going to have an aspirational goal, which will be in there. We're going to talk to them in the specification about how we're going to do the outreach, what kinds of financial assistance, bonding, and so on that are available to help them out. Approaches to developing workforce training and hiring programs, and also identification of things that we see as subcontracting opportunities that a big, heavy civil contractor might miss. They'll be focused naturally on the big concrete steel box. I think that what we've done with the help of procurement and council staff will have very good control over this. One of the benefits of having a big job like this is we get big, sophisticated contractors that are used to competing in the federal marketplace. And they have professional staff that deal with minority and small business contracting. And I think that we aren't going to give them notice to proceed until we become satisfied with the efforts they've done. So I think that will help out a lot with the MWESB requirements. Other things of note, cost overruns. The biggest cost overruns you can get on this kind of a job come from unforeseen site conditions, usually involving digging the hole. We've already dug the hole. We already know what's down there. So basically, we have to come in and put in a big concrete box, and I think our chances of having cost overruns on this project are small. We have all the usual tools in place. We'll be inspecting the job and so on to keep an eye on this, but I think the chance for the biggest type of cost overrun you get is very, very limited because we've done the excavation already. I think that's about.
So this is being done. This is being done a traditional
local design bid build. Yes, sir.
Well, when you say design bid build, that's to me that says something.
Three
different.
Steps. We designed it.
We're going for low bid for the construction of the big box.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And then if I might just follow up, thank you very much. When I asked for this item to be pulled, it was partly because it was such a large number, and also because I know you've been doing good work on this. And thank you, Christine, for initiating this, and David, for you and your staff's willingness to look for ways to increase the number of women, minority, and small businesses in the contract. So if there is a cost overrun, who bears it? Do we eat it, or do they get more money?
Well, that's a kind of a negotiation, and it sort of depends upon what the cause is. If we, in the process of them filing a claim, if we find that their claim is legitimate, then we would be legally obligated to pay, and we would. And if we don't find that their claim is legitimate, then it becomes a dispute and is handled through the disputes clauses in the contract.
So does the contract come back to council for approval?
Yes, it will.
Yes.
Okay, great. One thing that I think might be helpful in that case, the contract's allowed to have, as all city contracts are, 25% cost overrun, which in this case, since the initial number is so large, is a significant amount of money. So there might be in the contract something that would say that it couldn't go. I appreciate the explanation of why it's not going to go $25 million over a bid, but it would be good to specify that in the contract, I think. Can you tell me what the impact, and I recognize this is a project which has been long planned and has been budgeted for and is in this year's budget and in next year's and ongoing. Do we know the impact on the rates per year and how long this project will be being paid for through the rates, the whole Reservoir at Palview project?
I think we have the dollar amounts. I don't believe
I can
we
tell
have
you the
turned it into
dollar
rate.
Spread, but I don't have what that turns into in rates. The spread, this is the budget spread again, not adjusted for the detailed government estimate. This year, 11-12 is $30 million, 12-13, $53 million, 13-14, $27 million, 14-15, $7 million.
That's beyond this particular project, right? That includes the entire
project. That's the whole spread for this project.
For Powell Butte 2.
Powell Butte 2.
Does not include Keller Butte?
No.
And is it like, thank you. Is it like the Big Pipe project where after the initial expenditures we'll be paying off debt service for 20 years or so?
That's the way the bonds are paid off, right?
Right.
Right. So those numbers are the expenditures, and then will there be 20-year bonds or something that we'll be paying off on them?
25-year bonds 25-year is bonds. What we're usually selling these days.
So others than I did the Big Pipe project, and I was a citizen following it in the paper, I found it really helpful to know that we bond to get the money up front so that we're not burdening ratepayers unduly all at once. And then that does mean that we're going to be paying it off over 20 years thereafter, so that's why BES rates will continue to go up over the next few years, because we're paying that back. And so that, you know, as a paying back my mortgage, that kind of made sense to me. I think those are all my questions. Thank you. I greatly appreciate these explanations, and I also appreciate the fact that it's not an emergency ordinance. Thank you.
Other council discussion? All right, this moves to second reading. What was on? Anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right, moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read the title and call the vote? Second reading for item number 1582.
Vacate a portion of Southeast 21st Avenue, north of Southeast Ochoco Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations. Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Item is approved. Can you please read the title for report, item number 1583.
Accept the report on the 2011 state legislative agenda.
Ms. Pellegrino and team.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Adams and members of the council. Very pleased to bring the 2011 state legislative agenda to you today. Just a really quick word about process and how we got here. Process for building this agenda began last spring and involved deep and an ongoing involvement from you, from the bureaus, and from the public. And this year, with the encouragement of you, Mr. Mayor, and Commissioner Fritz, we held two public forums along with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to directly solicit public input into the agenda. So since we have actually discussed the contents of the agenda at two council work sessions, I actually just want to stop there, and I'm happy to answer any particular questions.
Have they chosen co-speakers yet?
Mr. Mayor, that is still in deliberation. The House Democrats have elected Representative Arnie Roblin from Coos Bay, and I think we anticipate that the House Republicans will continue to have Representative Hannah from Roseburg to be their leader. The format of the of how they're going to work out their power-sharing agreement has yet to be revealed.
Any additional discussion from council? Does anyone wish to testify on 1583? Can you please call? Chair will entertain a motion to accept the
so
report.
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded. Do you have more to add?
The only thing I would like to add is a few thank yous, if I may. My team from Government Relations is here today, and the members of Government Relations have put in many long hours on the agenda, so I just wanted to briefly introduce them. David Barenberg and Dan Eisenbeiss are two state lobbyists. Stephanie Mendoza-Gray, our intergovernmental relations specialist, Matt Jaffe, who's our staff associate, and our administrative team, who isn't here today, Amy Jolkowski and Leslie Kelly. I'd also especially like to thank each of you for your direct involvement in the building of the agenda, your staffs, and each of the legislative liaisons in the bureaus. I think it is the result is a very good one and one that has been thoroughly vetted and researched. So thank you.
Is this gentleman over here part of your
team?
Yeah,
yes, actually, yeah. And let me introduce the newest member of my team. This is his third day, and this is Nils Tilstrom, who is our federal assistant and is actually now busily working on the city's federal agenda with me. So welcome to the whole staff.
Welcome. We're really, really enthusiastic to have you.
I would think you'd need a hard hat if you're on the federal agenda.
And a shield and a cape.
And a shield and a cape. Yeah.
That's right.
Please call the vote.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Martha, and your team, and thank you, Mayor Adams, for co-hosting the public forums, and also the staff in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Our Judith Merritt did a great job of facilitating, and many of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement staff helped. In January of 2009, when the mayor and I were in our first 2 weeks, we held a forum to talk about the agenda last year, and at that time we promised that we would start much earlier, and with your help, Martha, we were able to do that. It was wonderful how many people turned out and how thoughtful the input was, and that has informed the agenda, including such things as walking path liabilities, 911 privacy, raising the beer tax. And the theme of equity was much more pronounced than it has been in previous years. My understanding is that the mayor has prepared a cover letter to explain that the reasoning behind our entire agenda to the legislators. And I think we're making a lot of progress in a lot of ways, and I greatly appreciate being part of that team. Aye.
Fish.
Well, Martha, we were all pleased with your appointment as the new director. This is your first package that you've brought to us and worked through, and you've done an excellent job. And I'm just reminded that every time I've been asked to go down to Salem to meet with legislators on any subject, the feedback I always get is how highly regarded our team is down in Salem. And that has a lot to do, I think, with the effectiveness. So congratulations to you and our team, and we're very proud of your work. Aye.
Saul Smith.
I would echo those remarks, Commissioner Fish. I think we hear good feedback about our team. Since this is your first legislative agenda, our expectation is 100% delivery on everything. Nothing less. Aye.
Adams.
Well, this is going to be a wily session. Not only is the task before them exceptionally difficult, but there's a house divided. So I know when I speak on behalf of my colleagues when I say, we will probably spend more time in Salem than we have had to in the past, for me, 5-6 years. And we stand ready to help you deliver for Portlanders. And I want to thank you and your entire team. Not only are you smart and good, but you're also great to work with, and we appreciate that. Aye. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 1584?
Authorize Central East Side Urban Renewal and Redevelopment Bonds.
Eric Johansson, what are we looking at here today?
Well, Mr. Mayor, Eric Johansson, City Treasurer. This ordinance will authorize up to $36.2 million of long-term bonds for the Central East Side Urban Renewal Area. The proceeds of these bonds will be used entirely to substantially to pay off a line of credit that has been established for Central East Side. Additional proceeds will be used to fund cost of issuance and a debt service reserve. There's no new money as part of this particular authorization. The bonds will be secured and payable solely from the tax increment revenues of Central East Side. There is no full faith and credit pledge of the city on these particular bonds. We're expecting a sale probably in the middle of March. Interest rates continue to be pretty good, and hopefully we'll stay that way, and we'll be able to execute the financing at very attractive interest rates. Happy to take any questions.
Anyone wish to testify on 1584? Sue, would you please call the vote on emergency ordinance item number 1584?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
1584 is approved. I want to confirm for the record, unless there are objections, that we will have, I assume, an evening hearing on February 2nd for the tree code ordinances package.
So moved.
Do we vote on it? It's been moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Anyone wish to testify on this motion? Sue, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. We are adjourned for the week.
Yay.
How you doing, Lindley? Good. Your son is growing so fast.